Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 140 of DM Discussions, a podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
It's the night. I'm here. We're doing stuff. Yeah, that's
things about, are happening.
Yeah, things are happening. It's
happening.
An exciting time.
Yeah, it's we've got some fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm pretty jazzed because, spoiler, I'm actually starting my main campaign back up again.
Ooh.
This week. So that's a really big deal that we're finally coming out of hiatus. I'm extremely excited for. Made some minis, painted them.
That's great. I mean, for multiple reasons. One, I love hearing about the creativity that you put into all your games. It's always a huge plus for me. Two, I won't be the only one trying to come up with topics based on stuff that happened in my game anymore. So that's a plus.
It's a solid plus.
Yeah. But seriously though, I am excited for you. I know that you've been kind of, feeling like you had a bit of a hole in your heart since you weren't running a game and able to
that
just kind
one
of
shots do just don't quite fill.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know what, I'm just going to jump into this right now. One of the things that's Nevermore and I have kind of found out as we've been doing, you know, like these kind of one shots at our local game store and stuff. And because I'm her DM all the time, we don't get to really play together much. So we're kind of looking into potentially, you know, joining the Westfall campaign that's happening at our local game shop. So if that happens, then we're actually going to be able to play together and actually have, you know, continuing characters as opposed to the level 3 or the 5 or the 10 that we just, you know, randomly play now and then. So, we're starting to kind of look into that to figure it out. And, we'll see how that goes.
That sounds awesome. There's nothing like, especially if you're a DM who DMs a lot or tends to be the forever DM. Mm-hmm. There's just something about being able to play in someone else's long-term or long-running campaign that is just so freeing, and I love it.
Yes. Yeah.
Am I doing that right now? No.
I mean,
but
I'm lucky enough to do it with +5 to hit, but I mean, being in multiple games is always a plus.
Yep. Yep. I agree. There needs to be more hours in the day dedicated to just role-playing games. Mm-hmm. And speaking of role-playing games, this is not like the news junket of Gen Con, but there are a few interesting things that did come out of it. Some of the interviews and such are still coming out. And there was two I wanted to kind of highlight that were interesting to me. The first of which being a small interview with Laura Homan, who is the new product architect for D&D. And what she is doing, apparently, is she is basically in charge of partnerships and doing things with other people. And so one of the big things that she is doing is working on opening up D&D Beyond as a platform to new partnerships. Because obviously, and I think we're starting to see the fruits of that in a big way, you know, from the original Kobold Press Tome of Beasts 2 or something like that, I think was one of the first like really big third party things now.
Yeah,
to the huge ones of like Cthulhu by Torchlight directly from Chaosium and the Abomination Vaults directly from Paizo. Like these are really big deals.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently she's really working on shepherding more things like that to D&D Beyond. And I one of the things they talked about We had the Chaosium team here. We had the Paizo team here. Both are not necessarily D&D companies, but she was involved in, you know, wanting to basically, they're coming to realize, I think, the mutual benefit of both, where like Chaosium and Paizo can get eyes on some of their biggest stuff. And people can, if they, you know, don't have time to learn another system, or maybe they're just very entrenched and that's what they do, they can get a taste of the Call of Cthulhu or the Pathfinder, mm-hmm. right? And then those that are interested can then take that and go, oh, this was really fun. I kind of want to play Call of Cthulhu now, try it out. Or, oh, that was really cool. I wonder what else Pathfinder, you know, might have. And I think I really, really like collaborations like that, because at the end of the day, it's a big pool. We're all swimming in it. There's lots of toys in the pool. And so I think that we should really just collaborate the sharing and not the competition aspect.
Yeah. Now, I'm with you on that. And I love the fact that they are taking like kind of their campaign settings and gameplay and actually adapting it with Wizards of the Coast for 5th edition, because like you said, it gives them that kind of taste of it. And if you really like that setting, knowing that there's like a full game dedicated to that is kind of a really neat way of introducing people and kind of bringing them forth. Like it's almost like D&D Beyond is turning into something that you have wanted for a very long time, you know, something kind of more akin to like Steam, where they sell other content on that platform. And granted, Valve hasn't really made their own game in a very long time, but you know, they're able to kind of bring other things in and share them with everybody else. The fact that they're taking those kind of other experiences and adapting them to 5e is kind of a new, unique approach to this stuff that I think is absolutely fantastic, because, you know, we've always said that, you know, when you have more competition, everybody benefits from that, because you get more ideas kind of jumping and flowing through everything. You have a lot of innovation that happens. You're able to borrow things from other, you know, systems to kind of enhance your own. So to be able to, you know, have something that's like official from Wizards of the Coast, like adapting things and bringing other, you know, IPs in, it just really is a huge benefit for all of us.
Yeah. And more talent is cultivated as well. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we're seeing this in the big jump, obviously, of, you know, Chris Perkins, Jeremy Crawford over to Daggerheart. That's actually a good thing, because this gives them space to creatively flex muscles they might not have been able to before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we see that a lot in the tabletop space, because just like many spaces, like voice actor spaces, tabletop spaces is a small community. Like the people who work, it's not a very large pool. The more games we have, the bigger the games we have, the bigger that pool will be able to grow.
Exactly.
And add new people to it. So I see this only as a positive. And then cross collaborations like this are also a really big deal too, because then that exposes people to other games, or the fact that there are other systems out there, right? And even if the someone who gets this Cthulhu 5e supplement never plays Cthulhu, they'll have been exposed to it, and they might have an idea about it if someone offers, or if they see a one shot, or even just from their perspective, that is a way for them to tap into the large 5e community and, you know, be able to make money off of a product there, and then give somebody a little something different than what they normally might have from first party.
Yeah. You know, instead of looking at it like, you know, they're taking a piece of the pie, it's really more of a, they're bringing a dish to the potluck, you know, where everybody's benefiting from this, as opposed to, you know, limiting by giving out more to someone else.
Yes. Yep. And I think, and they do talk about this a little later in the article too. They talk about how, you know, sometimes they have to fit certain things within their tool set. I'm really hoping that this push gets them to do a little bit of that D&D Beyond overhaul that it probably needs to have. Because I think the real comparison, I think we've talked about this a few times, is Demiplane. And I love Demiplane. I think it's awesome. But they built it to be able to make frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, D&D Beyond doesn't need to be quite that flexible just due to the nature of what it is. But being able to be flexible, if someone designs some cool class that has a bunch of extra unique mechanics to it, you want your system to be flexible enough that you can implement something like that. You have a campaign mechanic. You have freaking bastions. Like, you want your system to be flexible enough to be able to handle those types of things. So I'm really hoping, especially with this big third party push, that we will see more of that. And then on top of it, because Maps is going free, and a lot of these books that they're re-releasing are actually coming with sometimes even custom made, very, you know, full color, very pretty maps and encounter spaces for that tool. I think that's a really nice bonus. And now that Maps is kind of going to be going free, I think that's a really big deal and should help them a lot as they continue to grow it.
Yes, definitely. I mean, just the accessibility of, you know, having a subscription version of Maps has been great. You know, being able to play with, you know, my whole group and stuff in such a simplified, good way. And especially with all the upgrades and everything that have been coming with it. Making that just free to use for everybody is just really adding one feature that I think, you know, pushes D&D Beyond as a really great one-stop place for a lot of this gaming. So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, especially as we move into next year, kind of what they do. And kind of speaking of that and the integration of that, Todd Kendrick has a really, I mean, he's restarted his YouTube channel, which is great. He's been doing tabletop RPG interviews. I believe he did quite a few at Gen Con, and he's been releasing those slowly as he's been editing those. There's some great Daggerheart content in there. There's some great 5e content in there. But one of the things he got to talk about with Justice and Mackenzie was the new starter set, the Heroes of the Borderlands. Yeah. And they talked about how it is going to be significantly heavier and more content rich than some of the previous sets, which if you watch the trailer for it, like all the cards, the maps, the tokens, dice, the spell cards, the reference sheets. Yeah, it's definitely, and it, to be fair, it is more expensive too. It's a $50 product, right? But at the end of the day, it looks very much like something that would be super handy to have to bring to the table or bring to a game shop and teach new people how to play and be able to get them to understand and have like basically all the accessibility tools and such they need without even having to have D&D Beyond there. And so hearing them talk about it, I thought was really cool. And there's even going to be a how to play video that's going to be available as well. They really said the goal was to provide a smooth transition to the player's handbook for new players. So I think it, at least, and obviously we haven't seen the adventure yet, but I think that just based on what I've seen of the packaging and what I've heard from it, this is exactly what D&D needs as kind of a, let me teach you how to play.
Yeah, and one of the great enhancements on that too is the fact that they're incorporating things like a how to play video. I mean, with the way that, you know, technology, social media, everything is now, it makes sense that you would include, you know, links or some sort of, you know, initial, hey, you want to see how this works? Here's your quick start guide. Here's this, here's that, you know, utilize those outside avenues to give that information in. And I love the fact that, yeah, you get all these equipment cards and tokens and everything. It makes it easy. It is just kind of a one-stop. Hey, here's everything. I don't need to look it up in the book. I don't need to, you know, memorize a whole bunch of stuff. I have all the information in front of me. Of course, the only downside with that is that if you do move away from the starter pack, you have to start, you know, really kind of digging and remembering more stuff and, you know, keeping track of things. But you know what? As someone who's been doing that for many, many years now, I think it's okay.
I mean, it gets you started, right? Yeah,
exactly. And that's the point.
Everyone's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. And so I think it seems like a great place to start. They also talked about the Stranger Things Welcome to the Hellfire Club set coming out on October 7th. It's basically the whole 80s nostalgia. And if you are a big fan of Stranger Things, you know, Eddie as the DM, it's going to include four adventures spanning levels 1 to 3, and offers advice from Eddie for DMs. It's going to incorporate Easter eggs and references from the show, with art inspired by the 80s wax pack cards and character sheets reminiscent of the goldenrod sheets. So very, very 80s inspired. Not necessarily my thing, to be honest. Like, I was one of those people that watched like the first season Stranger Things, and I was like, oh, that's okay. and just that one just wasn't my thing.
Okay, well then, as someone who has watched all of Stranger Things,
I say, yeah, you talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I don't care that it is mixed up with Stranger Things at all. I just like it for more content for D&D and D&D Beyond. But I do love the fact that it does have like Eddie's suggestions and advice and everything, because I love that character so much. And
he seemed to be a fan favorite.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. He was great. And the thing is, I could totally relate to him as like, you know, the total like, hey, I couldn't relate to I'm the cool nerd part, because I was total, you know, nerd, not the cool part. But, you know, just kind of being an outsider, but still, you know, like, you know, doing his own thing. And I am dying to see what, you know, advice, quote unquote, coming from him would be for DMs, especially if this is, you know, geared more towards not exactly like a starter pack, but, you know, again, still kind of lower level learning the ropes kind of stuff. So, you know, we'll see if they've accurately captured his voice or not. But the idea of them, you know, going through and doing some of the stuff that, you know, you might have seen in the show, some of the adventures and stuff, would be kind of cool. And I mean, overall, I love the fact that a lot of the monsters in the show are named after things that totally do not relate to what they actually are in the game, but it's still a fun little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad it exists. What, you know, and it's perfect timing for the tie into the final season of Stranger Things coming out as well. Here very soon.
Yeah. And as someone who doesn't usually like horror, I really enjoy the show. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very popular for a reason.
Yes. And very, you know, popular what? For a reason. If you don't like it, that's perfectly fine too.
Yep. It is what it is. I've got lots of other shows. We were just talking about this right before the episode. I've got my Has-Been Hotel season 2 in October. That's going to be my October thing. And then Mighty Nein comes out in November, and they just announced that Fallout season 2 is coming out in December. And I just love the heck out of that show and those games. Yeah. They did that team. It has some, you can tell they got some big Fallout fans. doing the writing and the production. So, yeah, very excited for that.
You know, and it's funny too, because like, well, I mean, one of the big things I love about Stranger Things is the kids on bikes aspect of it. But
yeah.
I will say, I really want more Skeleton Crew for that kids on bikes aesthetic. Cause again,
yes,
Star Wars all the way.
Phenomenal show. We watched that one with the kids and it was,
Fun.
It was very fun. They had a blast. Cool. I love those types of shows that are like made for the family.
Oh yeah. I've got a Lego Onyx Cinder sitting in a box to be put together behind me. So I'm all in on that show. Anyways, sorry. I totally sidetrack on that, but
And then they kind of capped off the video with just a little update on the Artificer, as everyone knows at this point, or if you didn't, you're about to. The book got delayed because the physical copies were not made correctly and were warping after just a few short weeks. So they did the right thing and they delayed the Artificer release, and they're going to get all the books reprinted. So that's good. I'd much rather have a book that doesn't warp after a few weeks. But they talked a little bit about it. It's coming. It's been revised. It's been polished to align with, you know, the other classes in the Player's Handbook, with quality of life improvements, reducing mental load during gameplay. It's going to come with 5 subclasses: Armor, Artillerist, Alchemist, Battlesmith, and then the brand new Cartographer, which sounded really cool in the UA when we covered that. So they're aiming to make it a little easier to play and more streamlined. I will give you the full review once my Artificer player updates to it when it comes out.
So they're just kind of sitting looking at it, everybody playing with their new toys, and they're just
they were a little bummed. They're a little bummed when the news dropped that it was getting delayed, because otherwise they would have it or almost have it at this point. But yeah, no, it's I'm excited to see what all the new toys are and what it can do.
Very cool.
All right, so moving on from the news a little bit, I'm not going to lie. This next topic was inspired by Ginny D, as many things are, it seems. She put out an amazing video a few weeks back called How to Do Romance in D&D Without Making It Weird. And I was like, you know, that is a really interesting, very solid topic to talk about. So I thought we would talk a little bit about that topic just here, kind of from our perspectives and points of view. And then we are going to assuredly have that link to her video, because it's very good and you should watch it. Show notes on dndiscussions.com.
Yeah. And anything we say, she'll probably say much better and more eloquently, and sometimes with a sword.
Yep. Often with a sword.
Yes.
Romance in your games is very interesting. I think a lot of times we to use the phrase, we romanticize it.
Yeah.
When we see it in things like actual plays, right? Mm-hmm. Especially these very highly produced actual plays with sometimes professional actors. I mean, let's talk about Critical Role, right?
Yeah.
It's a very big deal. Every single campaign that they have done has had romance elements in it. Mm-hmm. The whole, you know, you got your Percy Vex, you've got your Laudna Imogen, you've got your Vax and Keyleth, you've got your Ford and Jester. Yeah. And so, like, that has been a through line. And obviously, these are professionals. They know where their lines are. They know how to act. They know how to kind of work with each other to do those sort of things. Most of us are not professionals.
What?
Yeah, it's a surprise. So romance in games can be something that is very interesting, that it can be kind of freeing to explore, but it also couldn't be something that can be very awkward or downright not wanted if it is not done well. So most of my advice starts out with, make sure that if it's something that is a possibility in your game, that it is addressed in your session zero.
Yes.
Highly, highly recommend. Because there you have, we talked about, you know, your lines and veil systems, about what people are comfortable with. There's some great sheets that you can give players to fill out for things that they're not comfortable with, like the do not touches or fade to blacks. You have your basic, like, you know, what I like to do, honestly, is rating systems. When I start a campaign, I usually will say this campaign is the aim between roughly a PG-13 and an R, right? And so then, you know, you figure out what people are comfortable with, and then there may be romantic content, there may be sexual content, but a lot of that in those types of games will be more fade to black versus explicit.
Yes.
And that's been my kind of experience for the most part in the games I run, and usually the games I play in as well. There are other systems beyond D&D. We've talked about Vampire the Masquerade before, where those types of topics can be a little more upfront, where the ratings, quote unquote, of those games might be higher. And so, again, it's just know what you're getting into at the beginning, know what you want, have those conversations with the DM and the players.
Yes. And one of the things too, and I mean, we've said this in, gosh, I would say at least 2/3 of our episodes, keep communication open, keep talking about it. If, you know, some sort of romance does, you know, start between player characters and everything, then you know what, that's perfectly fine. If you, especially if you've talked about it at the very beginning and everybody's kind of aware that something, you know, is cool to happen, but keep that conversation open. You never want to make anybody who is, you know, in your PC romance uncomfortable, but even more so anybody who's outside of it uncomfortable. It is just one of those things where, you know, we always need to make sure that we respect our other players. We respect, you know, our DM, you know, everything that happens with that, because you don't want to put yourself in some sort of situation that, you know, you're thinking everything's perfectly fine because you're just assuming, as opposed to actually, you know, discussing it beforehand and, you know, some sort of bad reaction happening. For instance, when, you know, Vax finally kind of professed his love to Keyleth in Critical Role, spoilers, whatever, it's a very old campaign at this point, and the season where that happens in the cartoon is long past as well. So anyway, sorry. If I remember correctly, like the story they talked about is that Liam immediately, like when he thought, hey, Vax might start having feelings, first of all, went to Matt because Matt and Marisha were in a relationship. And then he also spoke to her as well, you know, to kind of discuss, make sure that, you know, everybody was comfortable with talking about it. And again, like you said, they're professional actors. They're, you know, this is something that's kind of in their world. Since we're not, something like that is very touchy if you're not used to that. You know, I honestly couldn't tell you how I would feel if someone said, hey, my player character is starting to, have feelings for Nevermore's player character. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, there would be a very big discussion about that, talking about borders, you know, feelings and everything like that. And you have to be, if, you know, you want your character to do something, you have to be okay with the idea that if at any point anyone says no or anything like that, it's done. It's over. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be addressed. Because again, everybody's comfort is something that matters, and you need to be respectful of those boundaries. But then, of course, if in your session zero, romance is just off the table to begin with, don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really, really great explanation. There's really three major types of romance that you might find in your tabletop RPG game. First being NPC to NPC. Mm-hmm. This is pretty much the domain of the game master. These are the ones that are a little more tell than show, right? Obviously, there are going to be people in your world that have relationships. Sometimes they will interact with the party. And you can really get very deep storytelling with that. Mm-hmm. I've had many couples that have interacted with my gaming party over the course of the four multi-year campaigns I've been doing. And it is a way to enrich a story. I mean, heck, some of the bad guys right now in our current campaign, it's a husband wife along with some other people who are kind of in their periphery. And I think, we're talking about Critical Role. You could talk about Silas and Delilah Briarwood.
Yeah.
Right. That is a very, romantically entangled couple mm-hmm. that was very evil and very significant to the story, played very well. But again, they were all GM led.
Yeah.
So that is the non-interacting with the player type.
Yeah. I mean, I've done the same exact thing. There's a little inn called the Halfway Inn because it's in between a whole bunch of different places. And, you know, husband, wife, you know, it's family owned. So, you know, they interacted with them. I've had on a caravan, a merchant and her wife with her as like her protector and, you know, had characters that way, you know, and it would have played out if something had happened to one of them. Obviously there's going to be a bigger emotional response from the other one. There's, you know, a lot of different avenues to kind of play with that and, you know, add more drama if you want to. Just visiting towns, seeing, you know, different things. There's the classic case of, my husband or my wife is missing. Can you please find them? You know, there's different things like that, you know, from the kind of just the bare minimum of like, relationship, DM's running it. Here's a thing. That being said, you can also have the DM running things like brothels where, you know, players might go and interact or something. But then again, right there, we have communication beforehand is something that we talk about. In my world, there is, I think I've only actually had one, but it was more of a, something that like one of my player characters ex-wives ran using the money that she got from him as kind of like an FU. So there's nothing like, you know, weird happening from that standpoint. If anybody were to, you know, use those services, I'm not comfortable to play that out. And, you know, it was like they'll walk into the back room and then that's it. And, you know, we just kind of leave it at that. And that's another thing too, is that if you have a NPCs that the characters really kind of glom on or, you know, really, really enjoy and start interacting with more and more, there is always a chance that those PCs might, you know, develop feelings for the NPCs, which again is the DM running something.
That's the second type, right?
Yep.
Exactly. Is the NPC to PC relationship. Mm-hmm. And so this will mostly be the game master playing one of the many characters in some sort of relationship with the player characters. This is the one that I guess this is the start of one. This is one of the more easy ones to do. And this is something I have actually had experience with from multiple campaigns where a character may have a husband, potentially, that's an NPC, or a wife that's an NPC. They may become romantically entangled with an NPC that is reoccurring, or that, you know, maybe they knew in a past life. I've played ex-boyfriends. I've played girlfriends. I've played boyfriends. I've played husbands. I've played wives. I've played one night stands. I've played this, and the best, this one of my absolute favorites. One of the characters in my current campaign is a changeling. And so one of their personas is this like wealthy, older, attractive lady that the changeling then basically can con these older, wealthy men, essentially. So some of those interactions have been absolutely hilarious and very fun too. But though, again, those are like that there is romantic angle. One of the characters in my current campaign, one of the women they rescued near the beginning of the campaign has kind of become her girlfriend. And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of really good, rich story you can tell. Obviously, again, set your boundaries, set your lines and veils. But that to me, I think, is one of the easiest things you can do just as a regular DM of a party. If you're looking for relationship type stuff, NPCs can be a great way to provide it in a safe and fun manner, because at the end of the day, it feels a little different when it's the DM versus the player to player.
Yeah.
Which is the third type.
Yeah. With the DM, it is, it's kind of the idea that the DM is the embodiment of the world, as opposed to, you know, just focusing and being a single entity in that world. So, like, having that separation is a bit easier. I mean, still, you want to make sure that you're not, you know, like playing favorites or anything like that. But it is just one of those things where it's like, okay, well, this is just the part that I'm playing in this section right here, and that's it. Whereas when you go into like a player character romance, then it is, you know, a lot more intimate, a lot more personable, because you're, you know, even if you're not sitting at the table next to each other, if you're, you know, online or something like that, you're still having that one-on-one interaction, and that's it. It's not, you know, my character is married to this other character who the DM is playing. Okay, now the DM is playing someone else. Now the DM is playing someone else. You know, it's that one person the entire time, and that can kind of build. But again, you talk about the stuff from the very beginning, and if anybody says no, or anybody isn't, you know, reciprocal or wanting to do it, it just does not happen. It is the most important thing is that communication happens first before anything happens in game.
Yeah. And to be honest, I usually just, and this is just me personally, I usually slightly discourage PC to PC romance type stuff, with potentially the exception of if the players are like real life partners.
Yeah.
Cause that's a little different, but that's part of, again, like, it was a great example of like Liam, right, talking to Matt and Marisha before, before Vax, confessed his love to Keyleth. These are professional actors that are doing that. PC to PC relationships can also potentially cause drama. And one of the reasons I don't like them as much is if something happens from the PC to PC perspective, that can really mess up party dynamics.
Yeah.
As well, which is very rough when the GM is playing the character, that's a character. That character may or may not be with the party. And if that specific character leaves that the GM is playing, that's not going to destroy the party 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Because it's really the players that make the party. But if there are bad things that happen in a player to player relationship, that can become very hard or very awkward for the story itself. And so, like I said, there are tables that have been together for a very long time that know each other well and trust each other well and can work through things like that, especially if the table is full of professional actors. it's certainly not something I would recommend for a brand new table or a table that has only known each other for a few months, mm-hmm. right? You've been together for 10 years. Okay. You probably have a pretty good idea of where you're all at, where your lines are and such. Right.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, while it can be very fulfilling and very story rich, I would say, and again, this is just my opinion, for the average table, it's probably not worth going past the NPC to PC relationship level.
I personally agree. But I will say that, there are, of course, tables and games and things that is kind of the goal. That's what they're doing. You know, we're not saying that those are wrong or anything like that. There's tons of different types of games out there. You find what works for you and what plays for you. But anyways, going back to just like the kind of interpersonal, things that can happen with player character versus and player character and everything. Again, I've said it 20 times already, probably this episode, but communication is the thing that matters most. Just like when you are, role-playing your character as, adversarial to another player character. You have those touch points where you stop and you check in, you make sure everything's okay. And that's, especially with a relationship, that do you want that your character to continue with it, that you're okay with the steps that were taken, and even more so that, everybody's still enjoying themselves with that role play. If it's not, you stop, just hands down. And the thing is if you're, you keep coming back to being professional about it, I'm just saying, if you're able to disconnect from the character and, understand that it is role-playing, it is, we're, characters in a scene, then if something, like some sort of breakup or something happens in game between those characters, it could potentially have, very interesting story side effects and things that can happen. The interpersonal player stuff, that's where I think a lot of the problems occur, because it's really hard when I am no longer comfortable with this other player because something happened between our player characters. That is where the biggest problems can come from.
Yes. Yeah. Communication and consent are the two C's, the big buzzwords. I think you bring up a great point. The extent with which I'm trying to figure out how to put this. The extent with which you should think about those types of topics or pursuing those types of topics, I believe, especially when it comes to romance, is the extent to which you can differentiate between your character at the table and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have a very hard time differentiating player and character when at the table.
Yeah.
Those types of people can bring in some incredibly powerful role playing character moments. But that can also get you in trouble, especially when things like romance are involved. So I would say if you are wanting to do something like that, make sure that you and whoever you are involved with have a very clear ability to separate character and player during and after the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And out of all of that, that is the most important thing, is that everybody's there to play a game and to have fun. And that's really kind of what it comes down to. Again, communicate, make sure everybody's comfortable, and that everybody's there to have a great time.
Yeah. And as the GM, if you are GMing the game, you can also make sure to be watchful of things like that, to be referee if you need to. And to, because you have the ability to facilitate the world and check in, and you are one of the catalyst in a lot of ways for that checking in, making sure everybody's comfortable, mm-hmm. making sure everyone's consenting, make sure everyone is having a good time. So just keep your eyes open when that type of content comes up. Because you as a GM, if you are the person GMing, can have a big impact on making sure everything goes smoothly and everyone has a lot of fun.
Or just flat out say, I don't want this in my game. Please don't do it.
Yep. And that's another great thing to bring up at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Session zero.
This is a dungeon crawl. I will not tolerate any sort of romance.
Unless it's with Boblin the Goblin, who you will meet in Act 3. No, I don't know.
But yeah, it's romance can make your game and your world richer. Approach with care and respect.
Yep, definitely. And to hear someone put it much more eloquently, we will have a link to Jenny D's video in our show notes.
Yes, it's very good. They said that was kind of the inspiration for talking about it a little bit. So highly recommend you check it out, especially if you're running a game or in a game where that type of situation could come up. Also, for some cool things, just a real quick shout out, Sadie Lowry, who we've had on the show before. God, that was a great episode. She was phenomenal.
Oh, so great.
She announced that she is actually joining Critical Role as a developmental editor. So we are just, yay, giving her shout out. Congratulations. She's going to do awesome things. Yep, over there.
Very excited for her new position.
Very sure. Very sure. The other really cool thing that came out just a few days ago was from the Dungeon Dudes. They are very popular D&D YouTubers, but they released a teaser trailer for something called Tales from Wood Creek. And I saw this little thing. I don't remember. It's somewhere on Blue Sky. So I went and watched the thing. Guys, this looks like a legitimately highly produced TV show.
Yeah.
Like this is a really big deal. So Deborah Ann Wall, who is one of my favorite DMs, she has been in the D&D scene for quite some time, did a little show called Relics and Rarities on Geek and Sundry, which is a phenomenal D&D actual play. Had some really, really cool people. I think Kevin Smith was on for an episode. Smith, Charlie Cox.
Yeah,
Matthew
yeah.
Lillard.
Yeah, so she talk about role play. This is like sets and props and all sorts of cool stuff. There's a ton of like fairly big guest stars. I mean, they got Miss Marvel. I think it's Iman Vali. She's going to be playing in this thing. They got Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton's going to be in there. Hopefully they didn't let him touch anybody else's dice. It's big. It looks big. And just from the teaser trailer itself is very highly produced. So they're going to, they describe it as Deborah and Wall leads an incredible cast through spooky mysteries and unscripted surprises in a completely unique D&D actual play. And it's going to premiere August 31st, just in time for spooky season, on the Dungeon Dudes channel. Like I said, huge, awesome cast. Looks very highly produced from the trailer. I think they said they're going to be like hour long episodes, which is super cool because that's very, very doable in this stage of my life as well. And I'm very excited for it. So we will have a link to that teaser trailer in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it looks to be pretty great. I know that I'm going to be just consuming that as soon as it comes out. Watching Deborah Ann Wall DM Relics and Rarities, just, I mean, she has such a way of telling a story and just like bringing you and drawing you into it with just the smallest amount of words possible. It's absolutely fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to this, to, you know, really see what comes of it and to just really, you know, spend some time having fun watching her DM some more.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a while since I've gotten to see her do you remember that like the most recent thing with her was the clip of her kind of like teaching John Barenthal how to play D&D?
Yeah,
on and a podcast.
Like just a like little bit. Minutes. I'm like, I need more.
Yeah, she's great. She's absolutely fantastic. So yeah, very much looking forward to it. But with that, I think, Ben, that kind of wraps up our normal episode for the week.
Yeah.
Although, as we always like to do, we usually talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our own games. So, Ben, what have you gotten to play anything the last 2 weeks or so?
Yeah. So we updated everybody to 2024. It was
very cool.
A little challenging at times. But for the most part, we got through pretty unscathed. This coincided with a level 17, level up. So they're really high up there.
Ooh, that's quite the transition point.
Yeah, I know. It's like, okay, here's all this extra stuff you get too. Plus I've also gave them all each 2 ability points to put into whatever they want because of the flashback that we had. Cause I'm like, it's, I call it echoes of the past because they, you know, basically inhabited a hero during this major battle and stuff. So they, you know, my players are super overpowered and way more powerful and have these amazing magic items and stuff. And, you know, I've basically written myself into I guess I have to Dragon Ball Z all this stuff and make everything super more scary than it really is in order to do anything. That's fine though. But the fifth edition changes are actually really good balance wise and stuff. So I'm happy that the characters are there with the monsters and stuff. So it's pretty great. But aside from, you know, swapping everybody, we just had a session on Saturday or on Sunday. And it was a very good shopping session. Everybody kind of went through, you know, figured out the stuff that they wanted or needed. We talked a whole lot, RP'd a whole lot. And the big hit of the session was we went to the Carpenter's Guild because someone wanted a nice new veal because with their transitioned to 2024. They got a new proficiency, so they wanted an instrument with it. And then everybody else bought an instrument. So I don't know if we're going to have a house band or what, but I'm actually, it was a ton of fun to play out and kind of role play through and everything. And then as we had a hard stop, but I really wanted them to kind of try to get a chance to wet their feet a little bit with their new abilities and everything. So I threw them into a training ground battle, which we only got through two rounds. So we didn't really get to dive deep into the stuff that they could do. Tried a tiny little bit of combat just to kind of see what happened, and it went well so far. So I'm looking forward to when they really get to completely, like let their hair down and go all out with some of these new abilities.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear how, if at all, it changes up your balance.
Yeah, I'm interested too. We'll see how it goes. I do know that I threw them against just some storm giants. And those storm giants hit pretty hard. So
the new storm giants?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was just such a spur of the moment thing of like, there's not a whole lot of time left, but I want them to be able to do something. I just threw it together really fast, did a quick CR check to see, what everybody or what giants were, I think they were 13 or 14 or something. I threw three of them at them and it worked out pretty well. So.
Yeah. Felt pretty good.
Yeah. Ultimately, my players definitely would have won. But I mean, the times that they did hit, did decent amount of damage.
It seems like a lot of the revamp monster manual, they do just hit harder, especially those higher CRs, which is good. They needed to.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with all the healing that's involved and stuff too. And all the weapon mastery stuff. And like, there's a bunch of stuff that, we didn't get to do a ton with. So again, I'm really looking forward to really.
Yeah.
You'll
have to keep me updated because we converted just like slightly before hiatus. So they haven't gotten the chance to use the stuff quite as much yet. But I'm always interested in feedback from players because when I've played the 2024 stuff, it feels like there's more for me to do as a character. And a lot of that has to just do with like more abilities that can be used and a lot of action stuff getting moved to bonus action so that you can do more things. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely one of the biggest problems with especially certain classes in combat was I don't have enough to do, or I just use all my things and that is just hit. Right. Yeah. So I'm really interested to see how it works out because they did smooth that out a little bit too.
Yeah. You know, and something that I noticed just based off of, cause I obviously being the great DM that I have read every single page of all the new books. I forgot some of the things apparently. So I know that, drinking a potion is a bonus action. Feeding it to someone else is also a bonus action, which I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then remember how, Bless had a, or no guidance had a, like kind of a personal cooldown or something. It's not there. I remember that from UAT. Like it was like you can only use guidance like once, have a cast on you, and then like that's it for the day or something like that. I don't remember, but yeah, not like that at all.
Yeah, they changed that back.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, if I read it, because I read it a couple times, rules is written, guidance is just on you for a minute as long as concentration is held. So you can do it multiple and multiple times. It's not just like the, use it once and it's gone like it was before. If I read it correctly, I mean, keep in mind, I read it through really fast in the middle of like doing three other things as a DM does. But I thought, hey, that's kind of a cool new way to look at it. It definitely lines up with, what do you call it? That game, Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, no, yeah, and you're right. I just double checked. Yeah, it's D4 for anything for the next minute.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Super cool. Super cool. They took a, honestly, there's a lot of cues from Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
For 2024.
For the better.
For the better. Yes, for the better.
Yeah, okay. For sure. So anyways, that's what we kind of got up to. How about you? Were you able to play at all?
I was. I actually ended up doing a part one of a one-shot teaching game for some new brand, like full-on brand new players. A friend of mine reached out and was like, hey, me and my buddies would like to learn D&D. I was like, I know a guy. And so, and the guy was me.
Yay!
I ran them through. I think I've talked. Have I talked about my one shot I've written up?
You've before mentioned
on here. I probably mentioned it. It's called The Beast of Kelna, and it's a level 3 one shot. And I wrote it years ago at this point, and I've kind of refined it. And I've run it over a dozen times at this point. And I've had other people take my outline and run it as well. And I really like it a lot, not just because I wrote it, but because every time I've run it, it's really hit all the right notes as far as giving new players a bit of a taste of everything.
Yeah.
You got your combat, little bit of social, little bit of investigation, and then kind of like the single big single monster combat, and then also a group combat type thing at the end. So I really like it a lot just for teaching new people, because it kind of is very well rounded and it lets them try all the things and learn all the different facets and stuff. And I can run it in, well, it depends on the group. 3 to 6 hours is what I say.
Yeah.
Just depending on what the group does. It usually is either a longer one shot or two and a half to three hour sessions.
Yeah.
So this is one of the ones where it ended up being it's going to be like a 2-3 hour sessions type thing. So I'm excited to play the last half of it with them when we can line schedules up again, but they did great. Really were able to jump in very quickly. Really got a hang of the mechanics very quickly. I used D&D Beyond, which all three of them said helped immensely.
Good.
As far as like learning how to do the stuff and making the numbers make sense and whatnot. I used maps, which was fun. I was able to just basically have them launch straight in. Their characters are there. They were able to figure it out very quickly. So that's another, maps? Plus one for maps. Yeah. It worked great.
It was the first time you've used it, right?
Yeah. I've used it one or two other times for very short things. It's been developed a little more since I used it originally. That was back when it was really bare bones.
Yeah.
But it worked great. It did what it needed to do. The little combat log tracker is on there now, which is really nice because people can see their roles. So yeah. And I was able to run the encounter within maps itself, and it worked fairly well.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's it definitely got thumbs up from me and from the players.
Very
so
cool.
I'm glad they're developing that piece over the 3D one, honestly.
Yes, very much so.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Looking forward to doing the second half of it here soon.
Well, good. I'm happy for you. Bringing anybody into the fandom is always a fun thing to do. So I'm glad that they reached out and you knew a guy.
Yeah. Well, Ben, with that, I think we're going to wrap up the episode for the night. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. We really appreciate your feedback. We really appreciate your suggestions. And we just appreciate you hanging out with us for an hour every other week. It's always a lot of fun. And I get to hang out with Ben, which is also amazing.
Aww.
But before we go, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where they can find us?
You bet. Well, if you like the show and you want to hear more of it, I mean, first and foremost, check out your podcast player of choice, because every single episode that we have, I'm assuming, should be there. If not, though, you can always go to dndiscussions.com. Every episode we've ever done is there, as well as our show notes that have links to our different, you know, community pages, videos that we talk about, Kickstarters that we've talked about. You know, basically everything that we can have a link for is there. But on top of that, there are also links to all of our social medias, which is really only one. So if you want to check out or find us on social media, you need to use Blue Sky. You can find the show. It is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBKZord, and I am at Ben Bumhofer. So sorry to the person who emailed us and asked if we were on Instagram or something else, or TikTok. We are not. We are, you know, posty-post here and there on Blue Sky. So, you know, check us out. But if you want to reach out, you know, talk a little bit more than just, you know, something on Blue Sky, there's a link to our Discord server as well. We have a really good community that's growing there. A lot of people are talking, laughing, you know, asking advice, telling stories about their games. It's a really great place to go. So go to dndiscussions.com. You can find a link to our Discord there as well. On top of that, hey, if you want to hear me play some Dungeons & Dragons, you can check me out. I am on Plus 5 to Hit. It is an actual play podcast. I think we just recorded episode 6 of our campaign number 3. So it's still a really good jumping off jumping in point. I'm enjoying it. It is a world of mystery, and I'm excited to see more of what happens. So if you want to go along with me on that journey, go ahead and check that out. So with that, Ryan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I have a lot of fun, especially when we geek out about random stuff, sometimes before the show, sometimes during the show. So it happens.
It wouldn't be a D&D Discussions episode if we didn't go off on a random tangent at some point.
Every now and then. But with that, everybody, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Make sure to check us out. Leave 5-star reviews if you like us wherever you listen. We don't really know. We don't look. But we appreciate it if you do that anyway. And with that, until next time, everybody, be good to each other and roll high. See how I swapped it this time?
I did. Yeah. I did. We'll see you soon. And take care. Yeah, I swapped it too.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right, does it? No.
Yeah. So everybody, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.